welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Yudeli Wickham Ashby. And today I am so overwhelmed, so joyous, so happy to be chatting with Erin Brown, one of our great para athletes out of the Caribbean. Erin, welcome to Visions.
Thank you so much. I'm excited as well. And the Paralympics is going on right now. And so watching all of our athletes from around the world has been such a joyous occasion. And also witnessing all of the accessibility for all persons who are tuning in. I mean, I've seen vision boards where persons are able to follow who are not using sight. It's just amazing to see it all happen and to be a part of it. So thank you for having me.
It's extremely exciting, as you said, because it reminds me of London 2012, mm-hmm. where the UK pulled out all the stops to ensure that London was extremely accessible. The games were not only accessible to the athletes, yes. but to all the visitors, all those who were watching online, on television. Oh, magnificent. And this is what inclusion is really all about.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Erin, talk to me a little about yourself and how you acquired your disability.
Sure. So my name is Erin Brown. I am a disability inclusion consultant. I am in the beautiful islands of the Bahamas in the capital of Nassau, New Providence. I'm a short, blonde-haired Black female wearing blue-tinted glasses. My pronouns are she and her. And I self-identify as a limb difference individual, also known as an above-the-knee amputee. I am currently in the Office of Disabilities and Compliance at the University of the Bahamas, where I am the head of department and director. And I acquired my disability due to bone cancer, osteosarcoma, when I was in my early 20s. And despite doing the chemotherapy, it did not shrink the tumor size, but it did held it in one space. So they were able to remove that part of my leg. And so I'm an above the knee amputee who uses a wheelchair. I have a prosthetic leg, not only for everyday use, but also to play sports, cycling, swimming and running as a para triathlete. But now I'm also a para archer. So I use adaptive devices and a pair of crutches. I use those throughout my everyday life at this time.
Wonderful. Now, Erin, tell me a little about how you coped with the fact that you had cancer and then losing your leg.
So my journey is very, very, I don't even have a word for it other than purposeful. A lot of things that we go through from our childhood into adulthood that would be considered traumatizing or tragedies, for me, it was something that I feel was divinely ordered in order for me to enter or fully fulfill or even acknowledge the purpose that is on my life. And so my mother had passed from lupus when I was about 17 years old. And so I journeyed with her from her first diagnosis straight up until her last breath. And I make that point because when I was diagnosed, it was those experiences with my mother, who was a national athlete. She's the one that taught me volleyball, track and field. Our family lineage is full of national sport icons. And when I was diagnosed with bone cancer, I literally was home on break, finishing my undergraduate degree at West Virginia State University as a senior. And I remember falling, getting up, but I couldn't put any weight on my leg for an entire week. And I knew that was strange as an athlete because I've been running from I was about 9. And so I finally went to the doctor and they did the x-rays and all of that. But they then said I had to leave and go to Florida because they referred me to another doctor. So I thought it was strange, but I said, well, maybe it's just, we don't have the type of surgery that I need. Obviously, something's going on. Went to Florida, went straight to an oncologist's office. I didn't know it was an oncologist's office at the time, because in the hospitals, all offices look the same. And they did x-rays on my chest and nobody looked at my leg. And I was like, I came here because something's happening with my leg. And they said, yes, we know we're doing all of the x-rays. But they never touched my leg. They finally did a biopsy on my leg and it came back. I had stage 4 osteosarcoma. It had already eaten away my knee and my thigh bone was fingernail thin and it was attacking my muscles. And that's why I could not walk on the leg after the fall. The bone itself was flexing. Now, when persons hear these words, cancer and biopsies and all of this stuff, they automatically go into panic. I was not that person. I did not go into panic. And it was because I literally went through so much with my mom. I knew that when you're diagnosed with something, there's a plan. And so I just said, okay, so what's the plan? And everyone thought it was so strange. They kept asking me, do you understand what we're saying to you? Stage 4 is the highest it can go, and it's already in these spaces. And fortunately, that's why we were doing the x-ray of your lungs. It's not in your lungs, it's nowhere else in your body, but you need to start aggressive chemotherapy right away. And listen to me, I thought chemotherapy was a pill. Like, when you go, when you get sick and they write you a script and you go to the pharmacy and you fill that script and then you go and you go and you take it. I was like, okay. And they're looking at me like, Aaron, we need you to fly back to Florida to start chemotherapy right away. It's aggressive therapy that we're going to have to do because we want to try to shrink it or at least contain it where it does not move anywhere else. And I'm still saying to them, okay. And so my son at the time was about 6, maybe 8 months years old. And so I left him on a Thursday telling him I would be back the following, like over the weekend. And I started chemotherapy that Monday. They put a port in my chest. They did all the x-rays on my heart and the EKGs and all of that. And I just never had a panic. I never had a panic demeanor. And it's truly because of what I went through with my mom. Like I knew that there were things that needs to be done. There were things that I would need to take, and there were things that I would need to do. But at the end of the day, if all goes well, I will remain. So a weekend turned into a year and a half. I didn't see my son for a whole year. He finally came to visit. And when he came, I didn't let him go back because I was like, if I'm going to be over here, I might as well be over here with my son. So my initial reaction was not panic. It was not why. It was not how come. It was okay. So what's the plan?
Okay, so then transition now from all of your medical care and just coming back out, getting involved in your community. What was that like? What did you do?
So coming back after doing the chemotherapy, I refused the radiation. I started to do rehab. I went straight into rehab where I had to live in the hospital while doing rehab to get a prosthetic leg. At this time, I had no insurance, so we're paying everything out of our pockets. And whatever donation we received. So after trying the leg on in rehab, we had a donor who was gracious enough to allow me to keep the leg. And so, in keeping the leg, I was able to take it back home to the Bahamas. And going home was, I don't even know how to explain it. When I received my amputation, instantly leaving the hospital, I realized that the level of access that I had as a non-disabled person, I no longer had now living as a disabled person. And as simple as getting to the parking lot or having to wait for persons to either open doors or because the doorway was too small, or not being able to, or having to figure out how to exit or enter a building because there was no access routes in order for me to use. I experienced that even in the United States. So when I came home, and my first experience on the plane was someone trying to lift me off of the plane to come out of the plane on the tarmac. And I just thought that was unbelievable. I said to them, no. I said, I don't feel safe. Why do you need to lift me off of the plane? Because I'm using a pair of crutches. And their thought process was, well, you can't use the crutches to come down the stairs. And I said, actually, I can. And I would prefer to do that. So it was even from that onset, I could have not imagined what my life was going to be like, but it has been a absolute journey from hopping off of the plane and landing into Nassau and realizing that, okay, I'm going to have to really prepare myself to either be vocal or to just accept things for what it is.
And I know that you have been very vocal, very involved. So tell us, how did you get involved with Paralympic sports?
Yes. So I literally started off from self-advocating. I truly believed that n there was no way there were not resources available for my disabled community, who I'm now a member of, because I was not the first. And I definitely was not going to be the last. And so I started to self-advocate for my needs. And when I go into spaces, I would say to them, do you know that, I'm unable to enter this space because of the way it's set up? Or I would start up conversations like that. So I was always a person that used my words. I was always very vocal. I was always very present. And that is because as a non-disabled person growing up with my mother and my father, they were nation builders. They were grassroots organizers. They were persons who advocated for the underdog. I was that person who advocated for the underdog, and now I was the underdog. And so I started to self-advocate. And so in self-advocating, I had to go every week, and every month for my checkups. And during that time, we were having our first marathon here in the Bahamas. And I sat there looking at it and I said, I want to do the marathon. And everybody is looking at me like, what is you talking about? That is 26.2 miles, Erin. And thinking about it, I don't want to run 26.2 miles. I didn't do that when I had two legs. I was a sprinter. I played volleyball, high jump, 26.2 miles. And so I went ahead and I met a stranger sitting in the airport, and we were just talking, and they were asking me about my amputation, and I told them, and they was like, well, is there anything that you want to do? And I was like, yes, I'm thinking about doing the marathon. Well, how are you going to do the marathon? I said, well, I have a pair of crutches and I have a wheelchair. I'm thinking about asking them if I can do it using one of those devices. And they were like, I don't know if they're gonna let you do it. And so I said, okay. I said, well, maybe I need to get a prosthetic leg. And they asked, what would be that leg? Like, what leg are you thinking about? So I said, I don't know. I'll have to go and look it up. And I literally sat there and Googled while I was talking to this gentleman. And I said, oh, a sea leg seems to be really cool. I think I'd be able to use that to walk and maybe run. And he said, okay, here's my number. I come to the Bahamas every month. Go ahead and contact me. And when I come back, I will get in touch with you. Come to find out, and you're not going to believe this, the person was a prosthetist. Literally a prosthetist that creates legs and donate legs to persons. And I got my first leg. I got my sea leg, and I competed in the marathon that following year. I got the sea leg in about August that year, and the marathon was January. I started to go to the gym. I started walking the dog. I started just using the prosthetic more and more to get used to it. And I learned how to do like a hopscotch type, because you can't really run in a sea leg. You need a running blade. And I didn't have that. And so I went ahead and I said, okay, what I will do is I will go ahead and do the marathon. So I started to tell persons I was going to do the marathon. It turned in there was a group of persons wanting to join me. Some were non-disabled and some were amputees like me. And so the same company decided to give those persons who were amputees like me legs as well in order to participate. So that started my Paralympic journey. I started to look into, okay, how do I get back into sports? Because I thought about doing sitting volleyball because I didn't have a prosthetic. And so you sit on the ground. And I played volleyball all in high school and all in undergraduate. And so I realized there's a thing called the triathlon. And I just started asking around. I started reaching out to persons in the global community about it. How do I participate it? Rio, 2016, Rio was coming. And I was like, I'm going to go to Rio. And once again, persons are looking at me like, girl, go sit down. Like, you're doing a bit too much. Go sit down. But that is just me. Whatever I put my mind to, and I've decided that I would like to do, what I realized that God has been using me in a very specific way, because I may have started something off with self-advocacy, but it spilled into advocacy for my community. I started off with just being an athlete who wanted to be active again, and then I was able to take other persons with me. And so I started Erin Brown Connects, which was Paralympic development, which was getting athletes like me and all other disabilities out and about and active, not just competing, but just being active and socializing with each other and getting out there. And so that's literally how it started. I did my first para triathlon. Well, it wasn't a para triathlon. I did my first triathlon here in the Bahamas with a group of non-disabled persons. And that was it. I started reaching out to different organizations. I traveled for the first time to do a training with the Challenge Athlete Foundation, and boom, I was in. I started going every other month. I started to compete in different para triathlons abroad. And that's how I got to the qualifier for Tokyo, to become the first para triathlete for the Bahamas.
Fantastic. I know when I first met learned about you and saw you were cycling, and I was like, wow. How does she do it? But I
Listen.
really
It has evolved so much. When I first started cycling, I had to lock my prosthetic leg to the pedal. So it's like a cage. I had to like strap it on. So you know what happens if you fall. You're locked into the bike. So I used to be falling and the bike stuck with me. And so persons have to unlock me in order to get off the bike to see how I'm doing. But now, when I cycle, I now just use my one residual leg, the leg that remains. I just use that. I use no other leg now when I cycle.
Okay, beautiful, beautiful. I really have to compliment you, Erin, because your spirit is just boom, allowing other people to get connected with you, feel your energy, and get just as excited as you are about sports, about being active, about being involved in your community, and bringing other people along. That is so tremendous.
Yes.
So you're doing sports. You would have gone through your medical process and really came out striving. Talk to us now about work, as I know this is one of the areas that really distresses many persons with disabilities, securing either part-time or full-time employment. Talk to us because now you're director at the University of the Bahamas.
Yes. So when I received my amputation, I came home. One of my journeys was now garnering or acquiring a job. And so I went to interviews. I went to interviews with my crutches, because I didn't have the prosthetic leg yet. And persons always would crack a joke. Like the interviewees would always crack a joke, like, what tree you fell out of? What boy did you kick? Because I'm there with a pair of crutches. And I would say to them, well, I'm actually an amputee. And the shock on their face said it all. Like most of the times I didn't finish the interview, we didn't have the interview anymore. Some of the times they still went along with the interview but never called me back. When I got the prosthetic, I started to wear the prosthetic to the interviews, but I don't hide my prosthetic. So I wasn't a person that would just wear long pants all the time. If I felt like wearing a dress, a short skirt, or short pants, I would wear that. And so I went to an interview with a dress on, and I had the same result. This one time I went with a pair of long pants on, and they told me what my pay was going to be. I'm highly qualified. They're excited. They're going to do a training. I'll get a stipend during the training. And then one of the additional person in the room said, I noticed that you have a limp. Can you tell us what happened? And I said, oh, well, I wear a prosthetic. I said, I'm an amputee, I wear a prosthetic. And they just looked at me and I looked at them and they said, okay, so we'll give you a call. They never called me back for the training. I didn't get to know when the training started. That was it. It was done. And so at that time, I made up my mind that I was no longer going to look for a job. I was going to create a space. And that's when Erin Brown Connects, which started off with Paralympic Development, turned into a larger space for disability advocacy and inclusion management. And so I became a consultant. I worked in the fashion and beauty industry where I was able to attract and retain contracts for different projects working in those areas. I then started to do training for companies and businesses and other disability organizations to teach their members how to advocate, how to, when you go to an interview, how to build your confidence and just accepting your authentic self, because that's really the biggest part of it. If you show up into these spaces very disheveled or not sure of yourself, your value, your voice, you then present a person that's, maybe this person isn't right for this role or don't have what it takes. And so I transitioned from looking for a job to becoming a service, becoming a space where disability rights and justice was held. Persons were able to learn and implement not only their rights, but how to advocate, how to change policies, how to encourage the spaces that they do work in to become more accessible and inclusive. And so that I did that for like almost 15, 16 years. And so I didn't work for a 9 to 5. I didn't look for one. Anytime persons reached out to me, it was for a contract. I was not interested in going to anybody's desk and all of these stigmas and stereotypes that is built into employment and employees and co-workers and workplace cultures. I just had no interest in it. But the opportunity came where the University of Bahamas had reached out because a part of our Persons with Equal Opportunity Act of 2014 spoke about inclusive education. And being the premier tertiary institution within the Bahamas, it is their mandate to transition into inclusive education. And so I decided, okay, I will go ahead and I will pick up that mantle for at least 6 years in my mind. And I said that because one, I'm still training as a Paralympic athlete. I'm still traveling and speaking. I'm still a consultant in all of these global spaces like PAHO, World Health Organization. I am still moving about. So I didn't want to have to stop it completely, but I wanted to be able to enrich a space that allows for more educated, qualified persons with disabilities to come into higher education, technical and vocational spaces to get professional development and to promote the act, which we now had. So employment is a very, very, very difficult space because you're not just dealing with other persons' perceptions, you're also dealing with the current policies that exist, the standards, the biases, the practices, the access. And so for me, it even though I have a lot of knowledge and expertise, it still was challenging for me because I had to now work through a lot of those lens, those ableist lens that, oh, but she's disabled. Like, we really supposed to listen to her? Oh, well, so what if she can't get into the bathroom? She's just one person. Oh, so what if this one student needs this? Like, it's the reality of it is for our community, we need to strengthen and amplify our voices, not only as a united front, but in and as your specific need in equitable ways, because this is how we change the way employment is being treated, is being engaged, the opportunities that are going to come our way. And so it's an everyday moment for me. Some days I feel like, I'm riding the wave. Other days I'm underwater. But I take it as it is a part of the journey. And my intentional goal is to show up in order to give others a blueprint, the energy, the know-how that we exist. We are professionals. We are experts. We have a right to access. And we must show up.
Well said, Erin. Very well said. And on that note, I will definitely invite you back so that we can continue this conversation because it is the real type of talk that not only persons with disabilities need to hear, but all the other stakeholders need to really understand the real impact disability have on our lives and how we can advocate for changing of legislation, policies, attitudes, everything that needs to change to build a better society for all of us to cohabitate.
Yes,
So,
absolutely.
Erin, thank you very much for being so open and allowing us to see who Erin Brown is. So we will continue the chat so that our listeners would learn a bit more about you.
Thank you so much. And yes, together we continue. You know, disabled lives do matter, and it's these discussions all around the world that allows us to connect because we're all connected.
Quite true. You have been listening to Visions with me, Eudalie Wickham-Ashby, and my very special guest today, Erin Brown from the Bahamas. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. You can also email me at visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And you can check this and past episodes of the program on VOB929.com website. So until next week, love yourself, love your neighbor as you love yourself, and ciao.